"His back is broken, little one," Tyrion told her. "The fall shattered his legs as well. They keep him alive with honey and water, or he would starve to death. Perhaps, if he wakes, he will be able to eat real food, but he will never walk again." "If he wakes," Cersei repeated, is that likely?" "Well, the guards alone know," Tyrion told her. "The maester only hopes." He chewed some more bread. "I would swear that wolf of his is keeping the boy alive. The creature's outside his window, day and night, howling. Every time they chase it away, it returns. Maester said they closed the window once to shut out the noise, and Bran seemed to weaken. When they opened it again, his heart beat stronger." The queen shuddered. "There is something unnatural about those animals," she said. "They are dangerous. I will not have any of them coming south with us." Jaime said, "You'll have a hard time stopping them, sister. They follow those girls everywhere." Tyrion started on his fish. "Are you leaving soon, then?" "Not near soon enough," Cersei said. Then she frowned. "Are we leaving?" she echoed. "What about you?" "Gods, don't tell me you're staying here." Tyrion shrugged. "Benjen Stark is returning to the Night's Watch with his brother's bastard. I've a mind to go with them and see this war we've all heard so much of." Jaime smiled. "I hope you're not thinking of taking the black on us, sweet brother." Tyrion laughed. "What, me? Celibate? The oars would go begging from dawn to Casterly Rock. No, I just want to stand on top of the wall and piss off the edge of the world." Cersei stood abruptly. "The children don't need to hear this filth. Tommen, Myrcella, come." She strode briskly from the morning room, her train and her pups trailing behind her. Jaime Lannister regarded his brother thoughtfully with those cold green eyes. "Stark will never consent to leave Winterfell, with his son lingering in the shadow of death." "We will, if Robert commands it," Tyrion said. "And Robert will command it. There's nothing Lord Eddard can do for the boy in any case." "He could end his torment," Jaime said. "I would, if it were my son. It would be a mercy." "I advise against putting that suggestion to Lord Eddard, sweet brother," Tyrion said. "He would not take it kindly." "Even if the boy does live, he'll be a cripple, worse than a cripple, a grotesque. Give me a good clean death." Tyrion replied with a shrug that accentuated the twist of his shoulders. "Speaking for the grotesques," he said, "I beg to differ. Death is so terribly final, while life is full of possibilities." Jaime smiled. "You are a perverse little imp, aren't you?" "Oh yes," Tyrion admitted. "I hope the boy does wake. I would be most interested to hear what he might have to say." His brother's smile curdled like sour milk. "Tyrion, my sweet brother," he said darkly, "there are times when you give me cause to wonder whose side you are on." Tyrion's mouth was full of bread and fish. He took a swallow of strong black beer to wash it all down and grinned up wolfishly at Jaime. "Why, Jaime, my sweet brother," he said, "you wound me. You know how much I love my family." John climbed the steps slowly, trying not to think that this might be the last time ever. Ghost padded silently beside him. Outside, snow swirled through the castle gates, and the yard was all noise and chaos. But inside the thick stone walls, it was still warm and quiet. Too quiet for John's liking. He reached the landing and stood for a moment, afraid. Ghost nuzzled at his hand. He took courage from that. He straightened and entered the room. Lady Stark was there beside his bed. She had been there, day and night, for close on a fortnight. Not for a moment had she left Bran's side. She had her meals brought to her there, and chamber pots as well, and a small hard bed to sleep on, though it was said she had scarcely slept at all. She fed him herself, the honey and water and herb mixture that sustained life. Not once did she leave the room, so John had stayed away. But now there was no more time. He stood in the door for a moment, afraid to speak, afraid to come closer. The window was open. Below, a wolf howled. Ghost heard and lifted his head. Lady Stark looked over. For a moment she did not seem to recognize him. Finally she blinked. "What are you doing here?" she asked in a voice strangely flat and emotionless. "I came to see Bran," John said, "to say goodbye." Her face did not change. Her long auburn hair was dull and tangled. She looked as though she had aged 20 years. "You said it. Now go away." Part of him wanted only to flee, but he knew that if he did, he might never see Bran again. He took a nervous step into the room. "Please," he said. Something cold moved in her eyes. "I told you to leave," she said. "We don't want you here." Once that would have sent him running. Once that might even have made him cry. Now it only made him angry. He would be a sworn brother of the Night's Watch soon, and face worse dangers than Catelyn Tully Stark. "He is my brother," he said. "Shall I call the guards?" "Call them," John said defiantly. "You can't stop me from seeing him." He crossed the room, keeping the bed between them, and looked down on Bran where he lay. She was holding one of his hands. It looked like a claw. This was not the Bran he remembered. The flesh had all gone from him, his skin stretched tight over bones like sticks. Under the blanket, his legs bent in ways that made John sick. His eyes were sunken deep into black pits, open, but they saw nothing. The fall had shrunken him somehow. He looked half a leaf, as if the first strong wind would carry him off to his grave. Yet under the frail cage of those shattered ribs, his chest rose and fell with each shallow breath. "Bran," he said, "I'm sorry I didn't come before. I was afraid." He could feel the tears rolling down his cheeks. John no longer cared. "Don't die, Bran, please. We're all waiting for you to wake up. Me and Rob and the girls, everyone." Lady Stark was watching. She had not raised a cry. John took that for acceptance. Outside the window, the dire wolf howled again, the wolf that Bran had not had time to name. "I have to go now," John said. "Uncle Benjen is waiting. I'm to go north to the war. We have to leave today, before the snows come." He remembered how excited Bran had been at the prospect of the journey. It was more than he could bear, the thought of him leaving him behind like this. John brushed away his tears, leaned over, and kissed his brother lightly on the lips. "I wanted him to stay here with me," Lady Stark said softly. John watched her, wary. She was not even looking at him. She was talking to him, but for a part of her it was as though he were not even in the room. "I prayed for it," she said dully. "He was my special boy. I went to the Sept and prayed 7 times, to the 7 faces of God, that Ned would change his mind and leave him here with me. Sometimes prayers are answered." John did not know what to say. "It wasn't your fault," he managed after an awkward silence. Her eyes found him. They were full of poison. "I need none of your absolution, bastard." John lowered his eyes. She was cradling one of Bran's hands. He took the other, squeezed it, fingers like the bones of birds. "Goodbye," he said. He was at the door when she called out to him. "John," she said. He should have kept going. But she had never called him by his name before. He turned to find her looking at his face, as if she were seeing it for the first time. "Yes," he said. "It should have been you," she told him. Then she turned back to Bran and began to weep, her whole body shaking with the sobs. John had never seen her cry before. It was a long walk down to the yard. Outside, everything was noise and confusion. Wagons were being loaded, men were shouting, horses were being harnessed and saddled and led from the stables. A light snow had begun to fall, and everyone was in an uproar to be off. Rob was in the middle of it, shouting commands with the best of them. He seemed to have grown of late, as if Bran's fall and his mother's collapse had somehow made him stronger. Grey Wind was at his side. "Uncle Benjen is looking for you," he told John. "He wanted to be gone an hour ago." "I know," John said. "Soon." He looked around at all the noise and confusion. "Leaving is harder than I thought." "For me too," Rob said. He had snow in his hair, melting from the heat of his body. "Did you see him?" John nodded, not trusting himself to speak. "He's not going to die," Rob said. "I know it." "You Starks are hard to kill," John agreed. His voice was flat and tired. The visit had taken all the strength from him. Rob knew something was wrong. "My mother, she was very kind," John told him. Rob looked relieved. "Good," he smiled. "The next time I see you, you'll be all in black." John forced himself to smile back. "It was always my color. How long do you think it will be?" "Soon enough," Rob promised. He pulled John to him and embraced him fiercely. "Farewell, Snow." John hugged him back. "And you, Stark. Take care of Bran." "I will." They broke apart and looked at each other awkwardly. "Uncle Benjen said to send you to the stable if I saw you," Rob said finally. "I have one more farewell to make," John told him. "Then I haven't seen you," Rob replied. John left him standing there in the snow, surrounded by wagons and wolves and horses. It was a short walk to the armory. He picked up his package and took the covered bridge across to the keep. Arya was in her room, packing a polished ironwood chest that was bigger than she was. Nymeria was helping. Arya would only have to point, and the wolf would bound across the room, snatch up some wisp of silk in her jaws, and fetch it back. But when she smelled ghost, she sat down on her haunches and yelped at them. Arya glanced behind her, saw John, and jumped to her feet. She threw her skinny arms tight around his neck. "I was afraid you were gone," she said, her breath catching in her throat. "They wouldn't let me come out to say goodbye." "What did you do now?" John was amused. Arya disentangled herself from him and made a face. "Nothing. I was all packed and everything." She gestured at the huge chest, no more than a third full, and at the clothes that were scattered all over the room. "Septa Mordain says I have to do it all over. My clothes weren't properly folded," she said. "A proper southern lady doesn't just throw her clothes inside her chest like old rags," she said. "Is that what you did, little sister?" "Well, they're going to get all messed up anyway," she said. "Who cares how they're folded?" "Septa Mordain," John told her. "I don't think she'd like Nymeria helping either." The she-wolf regarded him silently with her dark golden eyes. "It's just as well." "I have something for you to take with you, and has to be packed very carefully." Her face lit up. "A present?" "You could call it that." "Close the door." Wary but excited, Arya checked the hall. "Nymeria, here, guard." She left the wolf out there to warn of intruders and close the door. By then, John had pulled off the rags he'd wrapped it in. He held it out to her. Arya's eyes went wide, dark eyes like his. "A sword," she said, in a small, hushed breath. The scabbard was soft grey leather, supple as sin. John drew out the blade slowly, so she could see the deep blue sheen of the steel. "This is no toy," he told her. "Be careful you don't cut yourself. The edges are sharp enough to shave with." "Girls don't shave," Arya said. "Maybe they should. Have you ever seen the scepter's legs?" She giggled at him. "It's so skinny." "So are you," John told her. "I had Micken make this special. The Bravos use swords like this in Pentos and Myr and the other free cities. It won't hack a man's head off, but it can poke him full of holes, if you're fast enough. I can be fast, Arya said. You'll have to work at it every day. He put the sword in her hands, showed her how to hold it, and stepped back. How does it feel? Do you like the balance? I think so, Arya said. First lesson, John said. Stick them with a pointy end. Arya gave him a whap on the arm with the flat of the blade. The blow stung, but John found himself grinning like an idiot. I know which end to use, Arya said. A doubtful look crossed her face. Septa Mordain will take it away from me. Not if she doesn't know you have it, John said. Who will I practice with? Oh, you'll find someone, John promised her. King's Landing is a true city, 1,000 times the size of Winterfell. Until you find a partner, watch how they fight in the yard. Run and ride, make yourself strong, and whatever you do... Arya knew what was coming next. They said it together. Don't tell Sansa. John messed up her hair. I will miss you, little sister. Suddenly, she looked like she was going to cry. Wish you were coming with us. Different roads sometimes lead to the same castle. Who knows? He was feeling better now. He was not going to let himself be sad. I'd better go. I'll spend my first year on the wall emptying chamber pots if I keep Uncle Ben waiting any longer. Arya ran to him for a last hug. Put down the sword first, John warned her, laughing. She set it aside almost shyly and showered him with kisses. When he turned back at the door, she was holding it again, trying it for balance. I almost forgot, he told her. All the best swords have names. Like ice, she said. She looked at the blade in hand. Does this have a name? Oh, tell me. Can't you guess? John teased. Your very favorite thing? Arya seemed puzzled at first. Then it came to her. She was that quick. They said it together. Needle! The memory of her laughter warmed him on the long ride north. Daenerys Targaryen wed Khal Drogo with fear and barbaric splendor in a field beyond the walls of Pentos, for the Dothraki believed that all things of importance in a man's life must be done beneath the open sky. Drogo had called his Khalasar to attend him, and they had come, 40,000 Dothraki warriors, and uncounted numbers of women, children, and slaves. Outside the city walls they camped, with their vast herds, raising palaces of woven grass, eating everything in sight, and making the good folk of Pentos more anxious with every passing day. My fellow magisters have double the size of the city guard, Illyrio told them over platters of honey duck and orange snap peppers one night at the manse that had been Drogo's. The Khal had joined his Khalasar, his estate given over to Daenerys and her brother until the wedding. Best get Princess Daenerys wedded quickly before they hand half the wealth of Pentos away to sellswords and bravos, Sir Jorah Mormont jested. The exile had offered her brother his sword the night Dany had been sold to Khal Drogo. Viserys had accepted eagerly. Mormont had been their constant companion ever since. Magister Illyrio laughed lightly through his forked beard, but Viserys did not so much as smile. He can have it tomorrow if he likes, her brother said. He glanced over at Dany, and she lowered her eyes. So long as he pays the price. Illyrio waved a languid hand in the air, rings glittering on his fat fingers. I have told you all is settled. Trust me. The Khal has promised you a crown, and you shall have it. Yes, but when? When the Khal chooses, Illyrio said. He will have the girl first, and after they are wed, he must make his procession across the plains and present her to the Dush Kaleen at Baes Dothrak. After that, perhaps, if the omens favor war. Viserys seethed with impatience. I piss on Dothraki omens. The usurper sits on my father's throne. How long must I wait? Illyrio gave her a massive shrug. You have waited most of your life, great king. What is another few months, another few years? Ser Jorah, who had travelled as far east as Vaes Dothrak, nodded in agreement. I counsel you to be patient, your grace. The Dothraki are true to their word, but they do things in their own time. A lesser man may beg a favour from the Khal, but must never presume to berate him. Viserys bristled. Guard your tongue, Mormont, or I have it out. I'm no lesser man. I'm the rightful lord of the Seven Kingdoms. The dragon does not beg. Ser Jorah lowered his eyes respectfully. Illyrio smiled enigmatically and tore a wing from the duck. Honey and grease ran down over his fingers and dripped down into his beard as he nibbled at the tender meat. There are no more dragons, Dany thought, staring at her brother, though she did not dare say it aloud. Yet that night she dreamt of one. Viserys was hitting her, hurting her. She was naked, clumsy with fear. She ran from him, but her body seemed thick and ungainly. He struck her again. She stumbled and fell. You woke the dragon, he screamed as he kicked her. You woke the dragon! You woke the dragon! Her thighs were slick with blood. She closed her eyes and whimpered. As if in answer, there was a hideous ripping sound and the crackling of some great fire. When she looked again, Viserys was gone. Great columns of flame rose all around, and in the midst of them was the dragon. It turned its great head slowly. When its molten eyes found hers, she woke, shaking, and covered with a fine sheen of sweat. She had never been so afraid. Until the day of her wedding came at last. The ceremony began at dawn and continued until dusk, an endless day of drinking and feasting and fighting. A mighty earthen ramp had been raised amid the grass palaces, and there Dany was seated beside Khal Drogo above the seething sea of Dothraki. She had never seen so many people in one place, nor people so strange and frightening. The horse lords might put on rich fabrics and sweet perfumes when they visited the free cities, but out under the open sky they kept the old ways. Men and women alike wore painted leather vests over bare chests, and horsehair leggings cinched their bronze medallion belts, and the warriors greased their long braids with fat from the rendering pits. They gorged themselves on horse flesh roasted with honey and peppers, drank themselves blind on fermented mare's milk and Illyrio's fine wines, and spat jests at each other across the fires, their voices harsh and alien in Danny's ears. Viserys was seated just below her, splendid in a new black wool tunic with a scarlet dragon on the chest. Illyrio and Ser Jorah sat beside him. Theirs was a place of high honour, just below the Khal's own blood riders. But Dany could see the anger in her brother's lilac eyes. He did not like sitting beneath her, and he fumed when the slaves offered each dish first to the Khal and his bride, and served him from the portions they refused. He could do nothing but nurse his resentment. So nurse it he did, his mood growing blacker by the hour at each insult to his person. Dany had never felt so alone as she did, seated in the midst of that vast horde. Her brother had told her to smile, and so she smiled until her face ached, and the tears came unbidden to her eyes. She did her best to hide them, knowing how angry Viserys would be if he saw her crying, terrified of how Khal Drogo might react. Food was brought to her, steaming joints of meat and thick black sausages and Dothraki blood pies and later fruits and sweet grass stews and delicate pastries from the kitchens of Pentos, but she waved it all away. Her stomach was a roil, and she knew she could keep none of it down. There was no one to talk to. Khal Drogo shouted commands and jests down to his blood riders and laughed at their replies, but he scarcely glanced at Danny beside him. They had no common language. Dothraki was incomprehensible to her, and the Khal knew only a few words of the bastard Valyrian of the free cities, and none at all of the common tongue of the Seven Kingdoms.